The conference is now being recorded.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Kim Mobley, NACEP's Director of Communications and Member Services. We're pleased that so many of you were able to join us today and learn about our newly published report, Expanding Access to Dual Enrollment in College, a Case Study of Memphis City Schools. This call is being recorded so we can provide member access to the presentation following this webinar. If you are unable to see the slides at this time, they will be posted to our website, www.nacep.org, following the webinar. We will be taking questions and answers at the end of the presentation, at which time we will unmute the audience phone lines. To reduce the amount of background noise at that time, please mute your phone locally when you are not speaking. If you'd like to pose a question while the webinar is underway, you may do so in the messages box on your webinar screen. Let me give a quick rundown of what you're looking at online. You can see that there are a number of icons at the bottom that will help you out. If you are not able to see the slides, please click on the icon that looks like a presentation screen. And then some others that might be helpful are the icon to view the participants and the icon to see the message dialog box where you can type out any questions that you might have. To the right, you can manage what view you're in. So, for example, if you click on presentation view, that will get the slides to fill up your screen. And lastly, before we get started, I want to give a quick plug for NACEP's National Conference, which is taking place in Chicago, October 26th to 28th. If you like what you hear on today's webinar, our conference will be perfect for you. We'll have leaders from all over the country sharing their expertise on dual and concurrent enrollment. You can register and learn more about the conference on our website at NACEP.org. It is now my honor to introduce our knowledgeable speakers for today. First, we will hear from Emily Carter and Patrice Watson of the Tennessee Department of Education, who will give us an overview of what the state priorities are for Tennessee as they relate to concurrent enrollment. Emily Carter serves as the Executive Director of Post-Secondary Coordination and Alignment at the Tennessee Department of Education. She's driving the work to expand student access to rigorous high school courses and early post-secondary opportunities. Prior to her current role, she helped lead the research and policy work at the Tennessee State Collaborative on Reforming Education. After teaching for several years in Massachusetts, Emily moved to Nashville in 2008 to pursue graduate studies at Vanderbilt University, earning a master's degree in education policy. Alongside Emily, Patrice Watson will be speaking. She is a native of Little Rock, Arkansas, and has lived in Nashville, Tennessee since 1999. She has worked as an educational consultant as well as taught in the classroom for a number of years. She currently serves as a program manager for the Office of Postsecondary Coordination and Alignment, Division of Career and Technical Education. Patrice received her Bachelor of Arts in Psychology, a minor in Education at Fisk University, and a Master's in Administration and Supervision at Tennessee State University. Following Emily and Patrice, Dr. Elizabeth Barnett will present the findings from the report. Dr. Barnett is Associate Director of the National Center for Education, Schools, and Teaching at Teachers College, Columbia University, and also serves as a Senior Research Associate at the Community College Research Center at Teachers College. Dr. Barnett's research interests relate to early and middle college high schools, dual enrollment, access to college, high school to college transition, community colleges, developmental education, workforce education, and international education. Dr. Barnett received her PhD from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in educational organization and leadership with a focus on higher education. She also has bachelor's and master's degrees from the School for International Training and from the University of Texas at Austin. Lastly, Joyce Mitchell will go into a bit more detail of what has taken place since Memphis City Schools merged with Shelby County Schools and since the original research was undertaken. Joyce Mitchell is the former Academic Director for High School Initiatives and is an Educational Consultant on Dual Enrollment and College and Career Access. Ms. Mitchell's scope of work included working with the school teams in turning around low-performing schools, forging university and community partnerships, and coordinating secondary innovative programs. She also has worked directly with school leadership and cross-functional teams in redesigning high schools into career academies and smaller learning communities. Additionally, she coordinated the district's premier dual enrollment program where students from all secondary schools have the opportunity to earn college credits while in high school through multiple university partnerships. Mrs. Mitchell directed and co-managed the district's Achievement School District by facilitating the implementation of research-based strategies to improve student achievement. With extensive experience in MCS as a Spanish-English teacher, professional school counselor, bilingual instructional supervisor, and director, Mrs. Mitchell has provided a laser focus on college access and equity, college readiness, dual enrollment articulation, career, and post-secondary planning. Mrs. Mitchell was the founding principal of Middle College High School at Southwest Tennessee Community College and is a charter member of the Executive Board of the Middle College National Consortium, which has a successful history of opening middle early colleges and enhancing dual enrollment nationally. She is a national presenter on high school redesign, smaller learning communities, early colleges and dual enrollment, and guidance and support services. Mrs. Mitchell provided knowledge and insight on high school issues during the historical merger of Memphis City Schools and Shelby County Schools. Working collaboratively with the Memphis's community partners, Mrs. Mitchell has provided extensive leadership in career and college readiness initiatives, dual enrollment access, middle college replication, and educational reform. And I'm so pleased to welcome all of you to our webinar today. With that, I will turn it over to Adam Lowe, NASEP's Executive Director.
Thank you, Kim, for organizing this webinar today and for managing the publication of this very exciting new report. Thank you all for attending and taking time out of your busy days to learn more from the experience of Memphis City Schools as it embarked on this effort to better prepare students for college by increasing the number of students in dual enrollment. I see that many of you attending are relatively new to NASEP or are participating in their first NASEP event, so I'd like to take a brief moment to introduce our organization before turning over the webinar to the presenters. NASEP's national membership network includes 275 colleges and universities, 35 high schools and school districts, and 15 state agencies. We support this network of dual and concurrent enrollment professionals by sharing the latest knowledge about best practices, support research efforts, and advocacy with the media, state agencies, and the federal government. Our membership gets involved in numerous ways to facilitate dialogue and information sharing, and we hope that you'll become active in sharing your own knowledge and expertise with your peers around the country. NASEP is 15 years old, but traces its roots a few years further back when a handful of long-established programs sought each other out. We have seen considerable growth in dual and concurrent enrollment since that time period, and an increased emphasis on serving students traditionally underrepresented in higher education. A few years ago, Elizabeth Barnett shared with me the work that she was doing providing research support to the Memphis City Schools as they took the lessons learned at two early college high schools district-wide. Given the dearth of citywide dual enrollment initiatives, I knew this would be an important story to tell. NASEP is happy to have been involved in providing some funding and support for this work. With that, I'd like to introduce Patrice Watson and Emily Carter, take over from the Tennessee Department of Education.
Great. Thank you so much, and thank you for having us on the webinar today. We were invited to provide some context for the Memphis case study around Tennessee's priorities for college and career readiness, and in particular looking at how dual and concurrent enrollment can help increase college and career readiness for our students. So as a state, we've been working to ensure that students receive the education they need during their time in high school to be successful in post-secondary. And being successful in post-secondary isn't just about enrolling, it's also completing. And so we've had several initiatives, starting in 2010, where we've really started to look at what it means to be successful in post-secondary and how we can adjust some of our policies to reflect that. So we had the Complete College Tennessee Act that passed the Tennessee General Assembly in 2010. And that was really, there were several key levers in there, but one of the main things is that it revised our funding formula, and so it was based on the quality of the programs and completion of students. So it really shifted perspective for our post-secondary institutions to look more towards completion. And I know, I think later when we hear from the Memphis study, something we find with dual enrollment in particular is that it really does help students on their post-secondary path, and a greater percentage of those students will actually go on to earn their degree. We also, this past September in 2013, our Governor Haslam announced his Drive to 55 initiative. And so this, again, looking at trying to increase the number of Tennesseans who hold post-secondary credentials. And the goal there is that 55% of Tennesseans will have a post-secondary degree or credential by the year 2025. And so Patrice and I, in particular, we work in the Office of Postsecondary Coordination and Alignment, and we're trying to expand opportunities statewide around dual enrollment and dual credit, advanced placement courses, international baccalaureate courses, really expanding the portfolio of early postsecondary opportunities for our students across the state. And so we're excited to take the lessons learned from Memphis and look at how we might be able to apply those lessons statewide as we try to expand student access to dual enrollment opportunities. And I think with that, I'd love to turn it over to the Memphis portion of the presentation.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Barnett. I should go ahead?
Yes, go on ahead, Elizabeth.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much for working with us on this report and this presentation. We're very excited to present the results of the study that my colleague Jennifer Kim and I did in the Memphis City Schools. The study built on a relationship that we had with the Memphis City Schools over several years when we were collecting and compiling their data on student participation in dual enrollment and their success and analyzing courses where, you know, students were succeeding and struggling and passing that along to the people at MCS to use in continuously improving programs. And it also built on work that we've been doing over 12 years with middle and early college high schools, you know, serving as a research partner. So in this case, since we had begun getting to know Memphis City Schools, we did think it was very important for others to learn about how they had conceptualized their dual enrollment initiative. So rather than individual schools working with colleges and forming local partnerships, they had a full district initiative that was committed to providing a range of college course-taking opportunities. And it was particularly of interest because they were doing everything possible to make sure that students traditionally underrepresented in higher education would have opportunities to take college courses and to experience themselves as college students, not only to learn the material, but to feel what it is to be in a college course and, you know, learn the skills and the navigation required to succeed in those settings. And further, they were able to provide these opportunities at no cost to students. So, you know, and many times we see that's a barrier. Even if the cost is fairly small, students will not participate. In Memphis, they were committed to making sure that students did not pay. So in putting together this proposal, we worked with the people at NASEP. We also worked with Ms. Mitchell, who's on the phone, and will be speaking in a moment, and directed this effort in the Memphis City Schools. The Middle College National Consortium and Cecilia Cunningham was a supporter of the work and provided a lot of technical and financial assistance to the district in gearing it up. And then, as I mentioned, we did the research. So over the 4 years that we were assisting with data collection, there was a 45% increase in participation in dual enrollment. And this was in large part due to the fact that Ms. Mitchell joined the district, and with the support of district leadership, they looked carefully at ways to grow the program and grow opportunities for students. So you can see that by 2011-12, there were over 1,000 students participating in the program. And what's also notable is that with regard to student demographics, that the participants in the program pretty much mirrored the district in terms of race and ethnicity. And, you know, that was certainly something that we thought was notable. What we saw in Memphis, as we often see in programs like this, is that the participation of girls was higher than of boys. And I think that's something that nationally we're all concerned with, is making sure that you know, college opportunities are more evenly divided. There was very wide participation by schools within the district. So at that point, 36 out of 46 schools in the district participated. And all of the schools who were designated as priority schools participated. So priority schools are ones that are designated as struggling, needing extra help. All eight of those schools participated in the dual enrollment program. It was also notable the number of different colleges participating. There were three of them that, that were the, that handled the majority of dual enrollment students. Two of those three were partnered with middle colleges, and not surprisingly, the students in the middle colleges were almost all participating in college courses and drove those numbers up. But there were also a number of students who were not, who were from traditional high schools. And you can see in the chart also that there was a distribution of different kinds of college courses being taken. So about 30% were career and technical. Most of the rest were in traditional academic subjects. And this gives you an idea of how students were doing in their college courses, most importantly. First of all, it shows you that there were students at different grade levels participating, although the vast majority were in 11th and 12th grade. Some of the younger ones were students in middle or early college high schools. And you can see in the final two columns the college course pass rates, which were, quite high. Using a D or higher criteria, it was 95% overall, and using a C or higher criteria, 91%, which is, as most of you know, is higher than what you find in many colleges. So our research, we used a case study approach. We conducted interviews, observations, and document review during the 2012-13 year. And we were concerned with a series of questions related to managing the initiative and increasing student opportunities. Many more of the findings are included in the report, which is posted online. I think you probably mostly, have seen the recent email that went out on that. But I wanted to share some of the findings here. So why was it that the dual enrollment program expanded? Why was it a priority for the Memphis City Schools? So first of all, they had the opportunity to see it at work in the middle-early colleges. For those of you who may not know, those are small high schools on college campuses serving between 200 and 400 students and targeted at students traditionally underrepresented in college. And they provide opportunities for students to take both high school and college courses and provide considerable supports. So the people in the district had seen these schools in action and believed that it was a good way for students to undertake challenging academic work and become ready to enter college. So it was a way to raise standards, foster a college-going culture, and it also provided a pathway to the Tennessee Honors Diploma. So there are various things that one can do to earn that, and dual enrollment is one of them. And another thing that they observed is that school pride was increasing. So schools that adopted this program were very happy to have it there and happy to be able to point to what their schools were accomplishing. So the overall structure of the program, there were 7 college partners. Schools picked out the partners and the courses that they wanted to offer. So there was a lot of choice at the school level. But at the same time, the district was serving as kind of a matchmaker. So they were in there helping schools to make sure that they matched up with the college institution that would be the best partner for them, and based on the courses the colleges offered and the kinds of support they offered and various other considerations. Another thing that the district did is they developed a full course list with equivalencies between college and high school. So there weren't questions or challenges related to what courses would count for credit, for what credits at the college and the high school level. They also provided funding, as I mentioned before, and acted as problem solvers and friends and, got in there and made sure that people didn't run into difficulties. So those were very important roles. There are different formats in place. Some courses were offered in a concurrent enrollment format with high school teachers teaching in the high school. Others were offered in the high school by college professors, and others were offered on the college campus. So selection and recruitment of students. So the interest was in trying to expand opportunities to the extent possible. And so this was certainly done, but there were some limitations. There was a requirement in most cases for students to have made the 19 on the ACT, although there were some exceptions. So there were some career technical courses where the cut score was lower. There were some college success courses or intro to college courses where, you know, there were fewer requirements. And there was a specific philosophy course developed by the University of Memphis where there was more open admission. But even when there were these firm CAT scores, it was possible to inform students early on that this was an option for them and to encourage them to do what it, you know, do whatever was needed to, you know, perform well enough on the ACT to qualify. And some of the counselors were being very explicit about doing that. So here's a quote from a counselor here that it helps students to become aware that they can take college courses and work to be able to do that. The support to dual enrollment students, on the one hand, it's important for students to get the real college experience in terms of becoming more independent learners. It's also important for them to get the support they need so that, you know, as they're taking especially their first college courses, they can succeed. So in many courses, the instructors we interviewed were very consciously working on college-ready academic skills like citation writing and revising writing and even how to safeguard one's college GPA. And the fact that they were meeting 5 times a week typically when it was, you know, when there were courses offered in the high school was an opportunity for them to offer extra support. There was also out-of-class support sometimes provided by coaches and tutors hired by the district. In some cases, those coaches were providing direct support, and in others, they were more helping students help each other. So we saw some situations where students were being helped, to, you know, encouraged to work together in kind of a peer study group to, you know, work on some, you know, what was clearly difficult math, and it, you know, they were able to be very effective supports for each other. And we also noted that one of the colleges had set up an early warning system, and that seemed to be working well for them, where the college faculty was sending out an email after courses and just, you know, a quick alert of any issues that were arising. So champions of the initiative, so to develop a district-wide initiative, it can help to have different players involved. So certainly the leadership of the Memphis City Schools, and Ms. Mitchell will talk with you in a minute, were key champions, but they also had involvement from the business community, who was interested in increasing access to post-secondary education, and the number of people in the community who were college prepared. So they were offering some support, Middle College National Consortium, as I mentioned, and then there were a number of individual school and college faculty who became very involved not only in teaching courses but in promoting dual enrollment. So, you know, they in many cases were the ones going to the principal or to college administration saying, this is something we need to do. So facilitators and hindrances to expansion. So facilitators, those champions, were really important. And the colleges became increasingly interested as they viewed it as a way to both engage in the community, but also, you know, there was, you know, that measure of self-interest in terms of recruitment and so on. And there were also college faculty who were getting, you know, very interested in helping the high school students and you know, felt like they could make a difference in students' lives. It was also helpful when they began weighting AP and dual enrollment courses equally so that they both got added weight in GPA calculations. And that was an incentive for participation by students. Now, hindrances, there were, you know, still limited numbers of teachers who were prepared with the credentials to be able to teach concurrent enrollment in the schools. And there were limitations on the school counselors who could spend the time needed to enroll students, which was, you know, could involve quite a lot of, quite an investment of time. And there were, you know, there was also some unevenness in buy-in. So there were some schools that really saw why they should participate, and there were a few who were less enthusiastic. There were cases where students didn't quite believe they could do it and, you know, perhaps needed more help to gain confidence. And there were some transportation issues in situations where schools couldn't offer enough courses within the school and, you know, would like to send students to colleges and couldn't always do that. So, so benefits to students, you know, we've seen that students earn college credits and, you know, there were some statistics on that earlier. But, you know, the people we interviewed also pointed to some of the other kinds of benefits that students gain by being in dual enrollment classes. So one said the students had to think more. In high school math, you're given a formula and you use it. You're not doing critical thinking. In the dual enrollment math course, you have to solve problems. You would draw on things that you'd used from other chapters and blend them together. So that's the kind of instruction that we want students to be exposed to. And another one talked about the dual enrollment is a dose of reality about what college will be like. And F doesn't bother the instructor. It's up to the student to do the work and be responsible. So then benefits to schools and colleges. I mentioned earlier that schools take pride in these programs and in the students and in being part of this larger district initiative. And also the colleges were, you know, quite clear that this was something that benefited them. So they, you know, it brings them good word of mouth, recruitment, funding, you know, that comes to them because of state dollars for dual enrollment and also district dollars. And also, you know, helping them to achieve their mission. Many of them are committed to the community and getting more students prepared for college. And just in conclusion, so, you know, our report, you know, in our report we had the opportunity to review the information, you know, through interviews, through student data and so on, and to, you know, come to some conclusions about the program itself. So our final findings were that the dual enrollment program offers an authentic college course experiences, and I didn't go into the quality controls used here, but they're well aligned with what NACEP recommends. And that the majority of students are from groups traditionally underserved in higher education. Support from district leadership played a vital role in making sure the initiative was prioritized and adequately resourced. That the dual enrollment programs contributed to the development of a college-going culture within those high schools, and that included schools that were identified as low-performing. And while access to dual enrollment was often limited to academically strong students, the schools or the district kept finding ways to try to include a wider range of students. And finally, Memphis structured its program to maximize access to courses via partnerships and establishing effective administrative structures. So with that, I'll pass this along to Joyce Mitchell.
Give me a second to get these slides back up there. All right, Joyce, go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon. First of all, I'd like to say a very special thanks to NACEP and to the Middle College Consortium and to all of the stakeholders in Memphis and also those in Nashville who worked so hard to ensure that dual enrollment continues to exist and that students will have an opportunity to receive college credit while in high school. This has been an ongoing initiative with the district, and we're so pleased that NACEP and Columbia University Teachers College, Dr. Elizabeth Barnett and Jenny, we really appreciate your being able to chronicle the work that we've done and to be able to tell the history. It's almost like a little piece of oral history with your research. Amela Smith, who is now the, who works in the dual enrollment office as a dual enrollment post-secondary specialist, is also online. And as we talk, she may also share some insights into some of the slides as well. So I wanted to try to give you a snapshot of what happened after this particular research was done. We were actually in the midst of looking at the next slide on the Transition Planning Commission. We, the district is now Shelby County Schools. We spent a year beginning in October where there was a transition plan to serve as a blueprint for the merger of Memphis City Schools and Shelby County School System. The plan provided strategic guidance for four components: academics, organization, finance, and operations. The Transition Planning Commission worked diligently at this. We're saying 9 months, but really it was almost a two-year process to create a plan that had a vision to build a world-class educational system for all students. It was very important to all of us who worked on the commission to make sure that we were providing access for all students, that we were not limiting what's going on at this particular school in this region versus what may be going on in other schools. We wanted to take the best of both worlds. This was a unique opportunity to build on the existing strengths. We learned a lot from each other. Just spending hours and hours together through the process, we were able to identify strengths in one district as well as those in other, and then we will have a better district altogether. The commission voted to approve the draft of the transition plan on June 14, 2012. The legislation was effective October 1st, 11, where they laid out the transition planning commission's makeup. There were stakeholders from business, from colleges and universities, from students were involved, also central office, parents, and other community advocates as well. Today, the transition plan continue to listen to parents and students and staff and other members of the community in developing a great plan. Looking at the Transition Commission adopted 10 guiding principles, and these principles were evident throughout. We knew that as we went through the entire process that we needed to have a focus on exactly what our key principles were, what we really believed in. And you can see those of you who have slides, and if not, just to mention a few of them, that we wanted to have high expectations, that we wanted to make sure that we were addressing the needs of all students, and we wanted an excellent community school, as well as to believe that parent engagement is essential and also a strong leadership. We also knew that Memphis City School had existed over 168 years in Shelby County, existed many years as well, that we had an opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do something that was really, really valuable. So the Planning Commission had been given a very clear mission to create a plan to guide the merger of Memphis City School System with the Shelby County School System that met all of those criteria as well. The Transition Planning Commission had approximately 82 recommendations. That's why I spotlighted recommendation number 18B for rigorous coursework. That was very important because it spoke to all of us who were in the work in dual enrollment, dual credit, and AP, as well as international baccalaureate. So we wanted to make sure that the voices of each of those areas were also part of the plan. So advanced placement, international baccalaureate, the honors classes, the dual enrollment college-level classes, as well as advanced-level CTE courses, and the virtual online program. So these were all programs that we wanted to make sure that they were in the same bucket so that students could access and parents could access whatever they felt would work for their students. So the recommendation 18B spoke to us, and it read, double the number of students participating in AP courses over the next 5 years, and double the number of students participating in dual enrollment courses at the campuses of institutions of higher education over the next 5 years, and increase international baccalaureate and dual credit offerings in high schools. So we were able to spend a lot of time with our CTE, career technical staff, administrators, directors, teachers, supervisors, as well as our content specialists to talk about how we can add rigor to students, so rigor to our classes, so that every student can access. So if a student actually needed to take a course in physics and a physics teacher may not be available, perhaps we can access it through the dual enrollment through some of our university partners who have been very helpful with us whenever we've come across that particular issue. So creating sustainability and enhancement of dual enrollment program provided accountable talk for all of us. Both SES and MCS have dual enrollment programs and wanted to maintain their programs at the various institutions or universities. On this particular slide, we wanted to point out that, first of all, we had a lot of discussions. There were ad hoc meetings, meetings on the parking lot, meetings in the cafeteria, meetings throughout the community. And we were trying to, the multiple pathways for rigorous coursework with AP, dual enrollment, or CTE, that students can access it in different ways. So we wanted to make sure that our community was also aware that we had to really market so that students would know that you can take a dual enrollment class at the university, or your teacher may come to your school, an adjunct faculty, or through articulation that the State Department worked with us on as well. And then some of the students who were involved in, for example, health sciences were able to take courses ranging from anatomy, physiology, or medical terminology, or some of the other CT courses that may be offered in the community colleges. So the next, we want to just share with you that the good news is that we did not lose ground, that anytime we were going into a transition period, then sometimes we're all concerned, but we did not have to be concerned because we were able to sustain the programs that we had and also to increase it. So you can look at the data that you saw earlier with Elizabeth, as well as this data for course enrollment for the five-year trend data from 2008-09 through 2012-13. So these were the number of college courses. Students may have taken one or more college class, and therefore those numbers were higher than your student enrollment. I don't know if Armella Smith would like to comment on that at this time. Okay. So during the 2012-13 year, go back a minute, the 2012-13 year, students, the total number of MCS students were enrolled. And we had 1,062 MCS students were enrolled in 1,966 college courses. Again, being mindful that 12-13, the total number of SES also, even though we were not unified at the time, had dual enrollment students as well and partnered with the University of Memphis, and you'll see those numbers listed there as well. Then we want to share with you the number of the college course enrollment on the next one. It's not surprising to us that Composition 1, Comp 1, or Comp 2 have the highest numbers. Partially because students are looking at the courses that they take in the first, in their freshman year. And many students look at the general transfer, what would I take as a freshman, and decide to take Comp 1 and Comp 2. And the social sciences, usually U.S. history, since 1877 or before 1877. And then your mathematics, usually either pre-calculus, calculus, et cetera, finite math, statistics as well. We had a lot of students who were interested in college one-on-one. We were also trying to think of ways that we could make sure the students are ready for some of the more rigorous courses. So the college 101 or the freshman experience or success in college allow many of our students to hone those skills that they need from time management, test-taking strategies, et cetera, in order to be prepared for the other courses. And You'll see the natural science as well, the world languages for beginning Spanish 1 and 2 or intermediate French 1 and 2, as well as the fine arts. Some of our fine arts students presented portfolios to some of the professors that they had met some of the requirements, and they were able to take it as well. And then with some of the technical courses, computer business courses as well, including speech and some of the other courses. So there's a range of courses that are offered through dual enrollment and dual credit that a student may be able to take and receive credit while in high school. The State Department has, we also have awarded students and received 12 hours of credit and receive a diploma of distinction if he or she has enrolled in dual enrollment. So everything has kind of come together as far as being able to offer students. We've done, we think, a fair job, good job in aligning the credits with the courses that are offered with the college and holding meetings with our college partners to make sure that we are on top of it, as well as our curriculum specialists in the district to see what courses are aligned with another course. And the courses are new. Every year there may be another course. Then on the dual enrollment fall grades, we're feeling very good about it. On the next one, you can see that we have a significant number of A's. If you look at just the chart, the blue and the red for A's, B's, and C's with green. So the majority of our students are doing very well and are making the grades. We try to put some support systems in place so that students would do well. And you can see from Elizabeth's report earlier that it's sometimes 95%+ of students received an A, B, or a C. And even students who withdraw sometimes, if they withdraw from the course prior to the 14-day for Tennessee Board of Regents, and remember, we have multiple college partners, so we have to be very cognizant of the admission practices and policies for all of those schools, all of the universities, and adhere to those. And as we look at where MCS, where we were when we started as MCS and where we have embraced SCS with our new vision, our new direction, and the fact that dual enrollment and students actually becoming engaged in more rigorous studies, we find that this is very consistent with the new direction as well with Shelby County Schools' strategic goals for college and career readiness with an 80%, 90%, 100%, and we'll be hearing more about that later. But basically, when I look at this and then when you look at it, I think we all can agree that we're looking about 80% of Shelby County students are college and career ready, speaks to us as well, and 90% of the students will graduate from high school, and 100% of students who graduate will enroll in a post-secondary learning opportunity. The work that has been done cannot be praised or applauded enough from the Academic Affairs Office and the work that Armella Smith as a dual enrollment post-secondary specialist, because there's a lot of hands-on. I'm often saying that it's almost like running an admissions office in a college, in a small, well, maybe not even a small one. You're looking over sometimes 2,000 course enrollments and over 1,000 students, and to Dr. Richmond as well as to our Superintendent Hobson for making sure that dual enrollment had the funds that were needed in order for us to continue to make sure that every student had access to dual enrollment courses where books were provided as well as any other supplies, and the tuition costs would be paid for as well. So thank you so much, and we're open to questions or in fact to Kim. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joyce. and to all of our speakers. At this point, we're going to go into a time of Q&A, so I'm going to unmute the participants. Just a reminder, if you're not speaking, can you please make sure that your phone is locally muted so we can avoid background noise?
Your line is now unmuted.
So at this time, if you have a question, can you please state your name and where you're from? I know, Scott, you posted one online that has not been answered yet. Did the high school students have to take the same college placement test as on-campus college students to be enrolled in Comp 1, Comp 2? So why don't we start with that? Joyce or Elizabeth, I'm not sure which one of you wants to take this, but maybe you can speak to what sort of requirements there were for students to take certain classes.
Okay. Comp 1 and Comp 2 requirements was 19 or 18 on the ACT, and we adhere to the Tennessee Board of Regents requirements for admissions. And then for some of the private schools, whether it's Christian Brothers University or Lemoyne on, then the admissions requirements would be the same as well.
Great, thank you. Now, if anyone else who posed a question we might have missed online, feel free to just jump on in and ask.
Message sent. Thank you for calling the Don L. K. Foundation. We're sorry to have missed your call. We're either on another call or away from the desk. If you know your party's extension, please dial it now. For Tony Lewis, dial 101. For Amy Anderson, dial 105. For Carmelita Galicia Munoz, dial 102. For Colleen Broderick, dial 108.
Somebody's going to get an interesting
Roland,
message.
Dial 104. For Matt Samuelson, dial 103. And for Sarah Jenkins, dial 106. Or remain on the line to leave a voicemail in the general voicemail box. Thank you and have a great day.
Sorry about that. Carla has asked a question, which is going to be recorded on this person's voicemail. Who paid for the college credit?
While I try that extension.
With full charge, and how will this be sustained?
Wow, that's a question. I guess some of our college partners can answer. I know.
I'm going to put everybody back on mute, and you can ask questions online.
Your line is now muted.
Okay. Are we ready?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Shelby County Schools pays for the tuition through the academic affairs budget as well, and through some of the tuition costs may be paid by the university. Universal Methodist has a way of sharing the costs. In other words, that the university has X number of dollars, and then the system has to pay X dollars for the tuition gap, the same with Southwest Tennessee Community College. The district also pays for the books as well. We've been fortunate to use some Race to the Top funds as well as Fund 1 funds in the district in order to cover the costs for those. And some of the schools will accept the reimbursable amount from the Tennessee dual enrollment grant, which is about $300 per course.
Okay, great. I'm seeing a question from Tim Stetter. Next steps in Memphis, continued expansion, new courses, sharing with Tennessee colleagues to build new partnerships. Could you speak a bit to that?
Oh, I am sure that we will continue to grow. I think there's a very strong commitment from our superintendent, and our college partners are also continuing to look for ways for grants and others in order to fund the dual enrollment. We wish that somehow with the state, you know, legislatures, that the lottery money, that's our in-house word for Tennessee dual enrollment grant, will cover all of, say, a three-hour course. But at this point, it's only $300. And we'll just continue to look for creative ways to find it.
Thank you. Patrice and Emily, I'm not sure if you have any thoughts, too, on kind of next steps on a statewide level.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the last part of that question, a statewide level as far as dual enrollment initiatives?
Yes, exactly. So Tim was asking how we can kind of use what we've learned from this to build new partnerships in Tennessee, and I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Definitely. And this is actually one of the priorities of our office, is to work on expanding those dual enrollment partnerships. And I think some of the things we can learn, you know, one of the things just looking at the findings from the Memphis study is that they were, you know, proactive in looking at the correlation between the courses at the post-secondary institutions and the high school courses. And so one challenge that we've found in talking to districts is that there's not always that clear connection between the courses, and we're working in our office to look at how we can update the high school course codes so that they actually reflect the different options that students can take at the post-secondary level. But again, that's, you know, it requires that partnership between K-12 and post-secondary. And we do have, we have the Consortium for Cooperative Innovative Education, which is designed for specifically that purpose. And so I think it, you know, kind of as I mentioned earlier, I think being able to see what worked well in Memphis and, you know, especially around those partnerships, how those conversations, you know, happened over time and what was the most effective, I think that'll be really good for us to take as we try to build partnerships in other areas of the state.
Great, thank you. Looks like we've still got some time before the hour is up. If there are any more questions, please feel free.
I don't know
write.
If we answered. I think someone had written a question earlier about the difference, and maybe Cameron and Patrice could speak to the difference between the dual enrollment, dual credit, and AP. And we all hold the belief that all are very valuable and that whether dual enrollment maybe work well for one student or one family, whereas another family would say, well, I prefer, you know, AP, or I want my child to go to an international baccalaureate school. So, and then the sometimes the forgotten piece, career tech, which is another vast opportunity for students that can receive licensures, that as we continue to grow and be able to form partnerships with the applied colleges as well as the community college, so a student who may be interested in obtaining a pharmacy tech license or culinary arts or automotive or other, or nursing, that student can start early with an early college experience through dual enrollment by taking some of those prerequisite courses, because we always know sometimes how very hard it is for some of the students to actually apply and be accepted in a nursing school. So perhaps we can begin to form stronger articulations and partnerships with them as well. And so the dual credit piece, I know we're doing a lot in the state with that. Or announcement that had come out where schools can begin to think about offering some courses at the high school that will preclude a student from taking some of the developmental courses, and so we can back it up a little bit, then I think all of those things will help.
Yeah, and just this is Emily again, just to kind of build on that, I'm glad you mentioned the CTE courses, because that's another initiative that we're working on, is we're looking at where we can help facilitate partnerships between specific districts and Tennessee Colleges of Applied Technology to create those dual enrollment programs in specific course areas. So we're excited about that as well. And as you said, we know that, you know, getting students an opportunity to get a kind of a foot in the door and you know, keep pursuing the program of study that they're interested in. And, you know, kind of along lines with dual credit, there's also the opportunities for students to earn specific industry certifications while they're in high school, and that can often be applied to post-secondary as well and actually go towards some credit in a specific program of study.
Thank you. We have a question from Elizabeth. Any online or distance dual enrollment?
We do have online, but our students have taken courses through the Regents on RODP, Regents Online Degree Program. And I just heard from a student yesterday, her father had actually written a letter to me saying how difficult it was for her to take calculus online. And so while that it works for some students, we also know that it means that a student, there are certain other behaviors and academic skills that a student would need if you're going to take a course online. We tried some distance learning as well, where you may have a teacher in the room, where it may be remotely, where a teacher is there with all the technology. We've tried to add some layer of support there by having a teacher or on those alternate days, someone there to assist students. So it's definitely available. Some students do well. They do well. I think what they're saying to us is that you have to work really, really hard, and you have to work so independent, and maybe at the point you want to have a question answered, your teacher may or may not be available, maybe available through email or something. And so, but we also know it's part of the future that online and that's, you know, the hybrid pieces of education. But the majority of our students, I would think, we have a very small percentage of students who take them online through dual enrollment. But I think that we also have to continue to market. One of the things we're always concerned, do students really know what's available to them? And working with our college partners to see how we can make sure that students continue to know in families, because we'll hear it frequently, I didn't know, and we're like, oh, what can we do to make sure the students know?
Thanks, Joyce. We have just a couple of minutes. If anyone still has any remaining questions, please feel free to type it into the messages box on your webinar screen.
This is Emily again. I just wanted to follow up on the online and distance piece. I think one of the things we've found with some of our initiatives is that it's so critical to have a teacher in the classroom that can help facilitate the learning for a student. We have it's something called the SALES program, and it actually brings the remedial post-secondary community college course in math down to the high school level, and it's an online course. And students have been very successful in it, and it's a dual enrollment in the sense that they are enrolled in the community college. It's not credit bearing because it's that remedial course, but again, you know, they're completing it online and it's independent, but it's very important that they have an effective teacher in the classroom with them to help them with their studies. So kind of as we look at to expand, you know, different districts have online and distance learning partnerships with a local college to do dual enrollment. But again, we know and we encourage those districts to have, you know, the hands-on teacher in the classroom to help facilitate the learning.
Great. Thank you so much. So I'm not seeing any more questions coming in, so I just want to give one final thanks to all of our speakers. And point you towards the website that's on your screen, nacep.org/publications. That's where you can find the entire report that was presented today. And with that, thank you, everybody, for joining. I hope that you have a great end of the week and a happy Memorial Day weekend. Thank you.
Thank you. Jesse, and I think it